So we're in this series with the book of Genesis, going through different parts of the book of Genesis. And last week we introduced Abram, or many of us, we know him eventually as Abraham. And so when you think about Abraham and all the stories that are tied to him, what comes to your mind? You might think about his call. That's in the end of chapter 11, the beginning of chapter 12. You might think about his time in Egypt, which is really a disaster. You might think about the passages that are tied to circumcision, where it's something physical that stands for something spiritual. Or maybe if you think about Abraham, you're going to think about the struggles inside of his house, particularly the struggles between Sarah and Hagar, or maybe the longing for a son, Isaac, and then the struggles between Isaac and Ishmael. For some of you that have traveled with John and me to Israel, you might think about what we know and call the Abraham Gate. That there's a part, normally when you visit Israel, it's in the very northern part, northeastern part of the country, to where by happenstance they found this gate to a city that dated back to the time of Abraham. And what we know about this in that particular time is that there was only one entrance into the city and one exit to the city. And so the gate that still exists, you can see and get pretty close to, and it's called the Abraham Gate, because it was the time when Abraham and Lot chased people up and out of Israel. And so we know, I mean, it's pretty conclusive that if that's the only entrance into the city, and the scripture talks about them going through the city, that they would have passed through that gate. And so for me, at least sometimes when I think about in the book of Genesis and I think about Abraham, I'm reminded I can still see at that park looking up and seeing the gate. The Greek word for that is it's really cool. It just really is. But I have to tell you, the more I study the book of Genesis and I think about Abraham, I find myself really glued to this passage this morning. This text that John read, it's very early in Abraham and Lot's time in Canaan. They've left Ur. They stopped in a place called Shechem. They visited for them what they will call the Tree of Moreh. And it's a place where they built an altar. And altars in that day had a twofold purpose. One, it marked an area, a geographical area that was larger than just the dirt. It was a place of a spiritual interaction with God. And at the same time, it was a reminder. And so what we do know about Abraham, at different points in his life, he traveled all over Israel, but whenever he needed a place of grounding or a place of renewal, he would return back to this area, this oak, Bethel, spiritual home for him. We do know that Abraham was very wealthy. The text tells us two different times he's very wealthy, that he had a fair amount of livestock, he had a fair number of servants. This is after their time in Egypt, which was a disaster for him. And so he's returned after this personal disaster back to this area of Bethel, a spiritual home, it's a place of renewal. And he and Lot, to some degree, you could see them as partners in a family business. And they've reached the point in the progression of their business that they now have a problem. And the problem is actually fracturing their relationship. And it ties to assets, abundance. Again, two times in the passage, it talks about their abundance, their wealth. And that their possessions were so great that the land that they were at this moment could not support both of them. And so an argument began. Started first maybe with some of the people on the front lines of their business. And then from there, it progressed up maybe into some managers. Eventually, it reached the sweet seats. To now, Abraham and Lot are now having to deal with this disagreement, this argument, this fighting, this quarreling. The argument had legs. It's kind of like fire. It grew. And Abraham did something to me that is quite shocking. He took the initiative to go to Lot, and what he said to Lot was, "Let's not fight between us." And you see his rationale. We are family, and we both have enough. So let's choose to do this. You choose whichever way you want to go. If you want to go to the left, then I'm going to go to the right. If you want to go to the right, then I'm going to go to the left. Well, Lot's not a dummy. On one side are these great lush plains, fertile, and they're perfect if you have a ton of livestock. And so Lot chose the more fertile lands, and Abram moved up into the hill country of Hebron, which is not the best place if you have a ton of livestock. So that's the story. What I want us to do this morning is I want us to take that story and I want us to look at it through the lens of our life, because I think that's where it can be most helpful. Because what's not up for debate is that whether or not we're going to have arguments, quarrels, fights, disagreements. And the ones that are the most that are the most difficult are normally the ones that are tied to our family, because there's normally a high degree of love, or to our close friends. When you have fights or arguments with acquaintances or people that you really don't know, it's easy to let that just roll off your back. But with the people that you do know and you know quite well, and those that are tied to closeness to you, they can be difficult. And what's really interesting is that often the fights don't, they might not originate with you, or they might not originate with another person. Sometimes we get triangled in. Abraham and Lot, they were triangled in. The fights began with people that were on the front lines, herdmen over here and herdmen over there. And then before long, the argument, it had legs like fire. It grew. And the next thing you know, now it's reached the very top with Abraham and Lot. And Abraham did something that I think is just sheer genius. It was critical for Abraham to realize what really was at stake. Was it about their abundance? Or was it about something deeper? Because whenever we have arguments with family or in close friends, what's really hard to do is to keep our emotions in check. Anxiety rises, and so then our emotions, they rise, and as to the level that it rises, then the more we operate under, we become very reactionary. It's fight or flight. And then if the argument doesn't start with us and we're triangled in, it's harder. And so arguments of this level have a tendency to morph and to evolve, and they grow. And so being able to actually see beyond the immediate and the emotion, to see what's really at stake, that's crucial. Which is why the discipline of reflection is the chief discipline in the life of a follower of Christ. What reflection does, it helps you, at least with how you see yourself, be objective. It's like if you took this multifaceted argument and fight, and you're able to lay it out on a table, and you're just able to unfold it bit by bit, bit by bit, and so you can see what really is the issue and keep what really is the issue in the forefront of your mind. Because I don't know how it works in your world, but often when I get in fights, it's amazing how fast I want to go 20 steps down the road. And what I'm really thinking about is how to win, or at least get my jabs in. And so reflection, and what I mean by reflection, I don't mean reflecting about what they're doing. You're never going to know. I'm talking about what you're doing, how you're managing yourself. How many of our arguments, this is where we have a lot of similarity with the passage. How many of our arguments are over abundance? Things. assets, possessions. I think sometimes the more we have, the more we argue. And so when you argue and you fight, is it really about the asset or is it something more? Or do you even know? And so reflection at least helps us to lay it out and to allow us to see at least what we're doing in the argument. And Abraham was good at doing this. And you can see it in the passage. Two times the passage talks about their abundance, both of them, very wealthy. And yet, when he has a conversation with Lot, it's more about Lot than it is about the livestock, which helped him then to take the initiative. And this is what you see often in marriages, right? So Abraham was at a place of peace and wholeness in his life, and so he wanted that to also be a part of his relationships, but he didn't wait on Lot to come to him. And he had every ounce of status in that day. It set with Abraham, or Abram. He was older, he was the uncle, and for years Lot had traveled under his wing, so much so to the case that Abraham, I'm sure, could have made a case to say, Lot, even your wealth, to some degree, sits with my hand. And yet, he took the initiative. How many times, if you're in relationships, and particularly in marital relationships, and there's an argument, and how fast the language moves into what I call rights. It's my right to do this. I'm owed this. And at some point in a relationship, somebody's got to take the initiative, at least to begin moving towards something of reconciliation. And yet for many, that's the hardest step to take. What that reveals about Abraham is that his status wasn't the most important thing for him. It was important, but it's just secondary. He could have sat back on in his chair and said, it's Lot's responsibility to come to me. I'm the older. I'm the patriarch. I'm the one that has funded all of this. And yet he didn't. If status is what's most important to you, I want you to hear me on this. It will be extremely difficult for you to take the high road. It will seem as if it is impossible. And yet, if we look with correlations to the gospel, and we see how Jesus interacted with people, high road. So Jesus in Luke's gospel, sitting on a cross, and one of his prayers to God is, Father, what? Forgive them, for they know not what they do. What he didn't say is that I will forgive them when they take the initiative and come say that they're sorry, when they come and kneel in my presence, when they give me what is due mine. No. He took the initiative. My words, I wrote. John 13, I think, is the best chapter. If not the best, it's one of the top five in all of the Bible. First five or six verses. Jesus is in the upper room with his disciples, and then you get a description about what's going on the inside of Jesus. It said when he knew that he came from God, and he knew that he was returning to God. So you get insight into how Jesus saw himself, his identity. And then the next phrase said that when all authority was given to him, which meant that he understood he was not just the most powerful person in the room, the most powerful person on earth. And what did he do? He sat back and he said, y'all owe me, right? No. He washed the disciples' feet. He took the initiative. Things like forgiveness, things like reconciliation, so difficult. And they will be impossible if we draw our sense of identity fully from our status. And what will happen is we'll seek to win, even if it means we lose the people we love the most. Abraham cannot control one thing that Lot does. What he can control is how he will respond. And you can't do that in ways that benefit you and another person if it's always about you winning. Because what will happen is eventually you lose the people. Abraham took the initiative to go to Lot and say, there is enough between us both. You choose the left, I'll go to the right. You choose the right, I'll go to the left. And it was more of a hardship for Abram than it was for Lot, because Lot got the plains and Abram the hill country. So how do we be that type of person, to where we operate differently, even differently than maybe the people that we're in arguments with? Throughout the book of Genesis, in every sermon, what we've identified is that there are two fundamental truths. There sits inside of each person this innate, this longing, this desire. It's what I'm calling a soul yearning to be connected to God, and out of that connection, then to be connected to other people. And there is a temptation that exists within all of us to meet that innate desire in selfish, self-interest and self-centered ways. And yet in chapter 12, last week's sermon, what we discovered about Abraham is Abraham has a sense of himself anchored to God, and the way that was laid out in his life is that Abraham knew security, he knew continuity, he knew his life had significance in the name of God, and at the same time, he had a purpose. And so for Abraham, he acted out of that place of wholeness, that place of peace. So therefore, he was freed up not to act on the temptation for self-interest. Lot, we are family. And being in a relationship with you is more important to me than even the things. It's more important to me than getting my own way. I don't want to live in a win-lose relationship. And it was more important for Abram to be at peace, or at least to try to be at peace with his nephew, even though he could not control what his nephew said or did. And so for Abram, he took the expense of this unto himself. And it is very difficult to do this if you on the inside are not pursuing a place of wholeness with God. Because what you are on the inside will determine how you interact with people on the outside. And for Abram, he is pursuing wholeness with God, and that spills over into his relationships, even with Lot. There's a reason why he's in this place around Moreh and Beth-El. It is a spiritual home for him. It is a place of renewal for him. He is feeding his life with God. And so then when that has to be applied into real world application, he can live out of that place of peace, even if it costs him something in the beginning. And so he's able to keep the real issue at stake before him. At the same time, he's willing to take the initiative to at least pursue it. And he's not going to dictate his actions about whether or not he's the one with status. And I think that's a pattern for us. How you interact with another person, you can't fake that. And so if you are pursuing a place of wholeness with yourself, that becomes the means of how to live with peace with other people, or at least the part of the relational equation that you control. Bernard Clairvaux, he talked about this in terms of love. He talked about 4 degrees of love. And I remember the first time I read his work, I thought he was off his rocker. Because he would talk about, if you really want to love another person, Shane's terms, holistically, you need to first learn to love yourself. And so there's part of me that thought, that sounds kind of narcissistic, doesn't it? Or selfish. Love myself. Make sure I'm loving myself and caring for myself. And then if I do that, then I can love another person. And then you read what Jesus said. You're to love your neighbor, how? The same way you love yourself. And so the lesson is what we can control with our life with God, we feed that. And this talk, before the sermon, I prayed about sanctification. The more we grow in the likeness of Christ over time, the more that will influence our relationship. That is what you can control. So that's our task. You know, we could turn the page, actually a couple of pages in the book of Genesis. And later on, after they split, Lot chooses here, so Abraham goes over there. Whether weeks or months or years later, Lot links up with some of the kings in that area and they have a war against some other kings, and Lot loses. And so he's part of the spoils of war, taken captive. Word eventually gets to Abraham, and you know what he did? He sat on his front porch, spit on the ground, and said he made his choice. That's what it says, right? You read that. Come on, you got to back me up a little bit, you know. No, it doesn't say that. It said, again, at Abram's own expense, he gathered up 318 of his men, and they made the trek all the way up to free his nephew. That's interesting, isn't it? What's not open for debate is you're going to be in arguments. If you've been in a relationship longer than 10 minutes, you don't need me to tell you this. And you're going to be in fights. Disagreements and quarrels. And there's so much that you cannot control. But that which you can control, you work to keep what's really at stake before you. And it might be about abundance, or about assets, or possessions, but the truth is, that's just the tip of the iceberg. The real issue is people. At some point, somebody has to be the mature one to take the initiative to at least pursue levels of forgiveness or levels of reconciliation. Might not happen, but it won't sit on you for the reason why it's not. And this ability to have this connection that is fed by God, that recreates and molds and moves in a person's life, that becomes the source by which you act with another person. I think this passage is every bit of our life. And I think Abraham is a good lesson for all of us. So may it be for you, my friends. Oh God, as we read this continued book of beginnings, really it's a book about family. And so we see even the times of people that are considered saints, their struggles, their fights, disagreements. And Lord, it multiplies sometimes faster than we're even ready for. Teach us a comfort level with reflection. And even the parts of the argument that really are ours. And then to do the work inside of each of us, painful as it is, to grow, to forgive, and sometimes that forgiveness starts with forgiving ourselves. But we want it to be life-giving and life-breathing. And so these, not the next 10 steps, maybe just the next step. Help us to see and then to have the resolve to act. Help us to love ourselves the way you love us. And then allow that to be the means by which we love another. Even when it's difficult. Oh God, we ask for this. We ask for your presence in all of this. And we pray this in your name. Amen.